Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today we open with some top news stories about a local outbreak at a high school, a high-rise hotel proposed in Hamul, deceptive mailers in some local races, and a missing Spring Valley teen found safe. Our newsmaker interview today will be with La Mesa Mayor Mark Arapostathis, talking about his accomplishments and goals if re-elected. From Public News Service, we'll have some national news headlines for you, including the January 6th committee subpoenaing former President Donald Trump. From California News Service, the governor signing a wildlife corridors law, and we'll be re-airing this Halloween season our interview with bookshelf editor Raina Menashe about her own book, The Spirit of Shy Moon Lake. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. The county's public health officials are investigating a large suspected outbreak of respiratory and flu-like symptoms among students at Patrick Henry High School. Tests are pending to determine the cause, though both flu and COVID-19 variants are still sickening hundreds of people daily in our region. The county urges everyone eligible to get a flu vaccine as well as COVID vaccines, and if already vaccinated, to get the boosters, especially the new bivalent booster that protects against some new variants of COVID. The Hamul Indian Village is proposing to expand its Hamul Casino to include a new event center, multi-purpose bingo hall, a 225-room, 16-story-high hotel, and a 6-story parking structure. The public has until November 14th to submit comments on the Tribal Environmental Impact Statement, or TEIR, which can be viewed at hamulteir.com. Comments can be sent to admin@hamulteir.com. Deceptive mailers targeting Democratic voters have been sent in several East County districts, and the mailers tout Republican-endorsed candidates. Some are labeled East County Democratic Voters Guide, while at least one was mailed directly by a candidate's campaign. In La Mesa, mailers try to trick Democrats into supporting Christina Licio for mayor, as well as Laura Lothian and Tony Orlando for city council. All three are Republicans endorsed by the Republican Party. And in the Grossmont Union High School District, a similar mailer urges Democrats not to let extremists take over school boards. It urges support for Dr. Gary Woods, a conservative Republican school board member who teaches creationism at a Bible college. You can find a list of candidates who are actually endorsed by the County Democratic Party at sddemocrats.org, and a list of candidates endorsed by the Republican Party here at sandiegorepublicans.org. The San Diego Sheriff's Department has found a missing Spring Valley teenager, and she is now safe at home. 15-year-old Alina Mitchum, known as Gracie, went missing September 22nd, and her family feared she had been lured away by somebody she met on PlayStation. The Sheriff's Major Crimes Division is investigating, and a spokesman says due to the sensitive nature of the investigation, no additional information will be released at this time. The department thanked media and the public for their help in bringing Gracie home. East County Magazine was the first media outlet to report on the missing teen in response to pleas from her family members on social media seeking help to locate her. Soon after, the sheriff sent out a press release and the search went viral on social media. The case was also listed on national missing person sites. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And today, my very special guest is La Mesa's Mayor Mark Arapostathis. He is a lifelong La Mesa resident, The teacher, once honored as a County Teacher of the Year and Director of the Theater Arts at La Mesa Arts Academy, known as Dr. A, he holds a doctorate in education from USD and SDSU. He served on the La Mesa City Council and headed up the La Mesa Arts Alliance before becoming mayor, and now he's running for re-election. So, Mayor, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start by having you tell us what you consider to be your most significant accomplishments as mayor, or for that matter, when you were on the council before that.
I think the programs that we've initiated in the past 8 years as mayor, but even before that, but as far as public safety, building a new police station, fire station, increasing the number of public safety officers, the JPA with Heartland Fire has helped streamline a lot of what we do, and the joint use between the fire departments in Lemon Grove and El Cajon provides greater service to the people. And so those are some of the things. Also, as far as helping business, I know that, you know, as we came out of COVID and it's been so hard on businesses and some didn't survive, that we're using the money that was given not only to help businesses that are existing and trying to relax some of the restrictions as far as outdoor dining, but creating the LEAP program, the La Mesa Entrepreneur Assistance Program, to foster new businesses and encourage new businesses with a grant program up to $20,000. And so those are some things that are seeding the garden and trying to get new businesses to grow. And so the other thing that I'm really proud of is our parks program. We have so many parks in La Mesa, and that we're renovating and improving the parks. And that goes along with beyond keeping and maintaining safe streets through public safety and through making sure the streets are safe because they're paved and that they're well lit. Having events and in promoting cultural arts in the city is important. Cities, that's part of what government needs to do, is provide activities so citizens can live not only a safe life, but to have a happy life.
Great. Well, you jumped ahead to a couple of my questions there on business and arts. No, that's okay. But we'll just go down the list here of the issues in La Mesa. Let's start with climate change, which is an issue that, of course, is impacting the entire world and one that many cities are taking action to address. You know, your predecessor, I think, was the first mayor locally to sign the U.S. mayor's climate change pledge, and you've worked on a climate action plan under your leadership. Can you share, Dr. A, what some of the steps are that you have supported for La Mesa to do its share in reducing greenhouse gas emissions? And what more, if anything, you would like to see done to help protect our environment for future generations in La Mesa while balancing against the concerns of those who, don't want to see things go too far or be too inconvenienced by some of the steps that have been proposed?
Well, it's important to know, first of all, that the Climate Action Plan is state mandated. And so the city of La Mesa is required to adopt a climate action plan. And I was happy and proud that our city manager was able to get ahead of that before it was imposed on us, that we drafted a climate action plan and the entire council was on board with that. And we all had input. The staff obviously did the heavy lifting. Then we hired a climate action manager to manage our climate action plan. And she's Hillary Ego, and she is managing that and making sure that we're compliant and taking the next steps. I think in La Mesa, some of the things that you're seeing around are trying to dovetail with, as technology is being created to help reduce greenhouse gas effects and make it more plausible for people to themselves reduce their carbon footprint, electric vehicles and charging stations. The city of La Mesa is moving along with that. If you drive around, you'll see many more houses that have solar. And I think that's an enormous first step for many people. I have solar. The idea of harnessing the sun, we have it, especially it's abundant here in San Diego County, that it's it also is a cost saving. So even if people aren't necessarily on board with the climate action plan, they're going to be saving money. So those are some of the things that La Mesa is doing to encourage. Also, we're slowly trying to change out our fleet vehicles so they're not burning gas. My only caution is the environment isn't anything without the people in it. So although I have friends that are, you know, they want to take steps, I just want to make sure that we're doing it in a way that we bring everybody along. And even people that are saying that the climate action plan is too much. I think that if you talk to people and you bring them along and you show them that it's done in a reasonable way that they can comply, mm-hmm. they'll realize that it is helping the environment. And I said just recently, back in 1973, the Clean Water Act and then the Clean Air Act, if you drove through Los Angeles, when people say we're not really helping the climate, it's just Little Mesa. But when you drove through Los Angeles in the 70s, and my cousins lived up there, and you couldn't see the mountains, and now you drive up there, and there's emission standards. And
I remember that. Humans, yeah, I literally passed out from the smog in downtown Los Angeles, walking down the street. The paramedics were reviving me.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, yeah, you moved away. Couldn't handle the air there.
Well, human beings have actually been able to, obviously cars created all that smog, and mm-hmm. human beings have been able to mitigate that. And yeah, to the effect, when I was in high school, sometimes we wouldn't run the mile because it was a stage 3 smog alert. So right. What I would say is La Mesa is moving in those steps to do what we can. We can't solve the world's problems.
Right.
We can't have everybody come to a complete stop and try, because there's counties around us. There's cities
right.
around us.
And we can't control what China or somebody does, but we control exactly. what happens so, here in our
We're taking town. Steps that are reasonable. And when you look at our plan and compared mm-hmm. to the rest of the cities around us and the counties, we are out in front, and we are doing the things that we need to
leadership.
Do to not only be compliant, but to move forward to protect our environment.
Very good. Homelessness has been on the rise across our entire region, and it's often cited by residents as a top concern. Can you tell us what steps have been taken to address homelessness so far in La Mesa, and what more you hope to do if reelected to get help for these people on our streets?
Homelessness had been addressed by public safety mostly, and it impacted our police department and our fire department in a way that was sometimes not preventing them from doing their other jobs, but it did hinder that. And so the HOME program, Homeless Outreach Mobile Engagement, is something that we started about 24 months ago. And what we found is through research and dialogue and talking to best practices around not only our city, but around the nation, talking to people that it's worked for in Utah and Minnesota, other cities that they've found some success, that getting people that are chronically homeless permanently housed is the goal. It's great that we have different organizations that feed people and they give them a shower. That's wonderful. That's very caring. What happens on day 2 is what we ask. So we want right. people to become autonomous of the government, so they're not always having to rely. I think the first thing that we've decided to do is to triage the situation. Everybody that is experiencing homelessness is not the same. Every story is not the same.
Right.
There are people that have addiction, unfortunately, and they have, because of their addiction, they're starting to experience mental problems because of some of the things that they're addicted to. So every situation is different. So our clinicians go out and make contact, and the HOME program is, it's a slow process because you can't just sweep people up. And so you have to develop some
right.
type of dialogue.
We should add there has actually been a court ruling on that cities cannot just take people off the streets and clear homeless
right,
camps.
The Boise ruling,
unless there are shelter beds available and they're offered and some
and they're compliant.
Beds.
People
no,
have,
right.
to,
yeah.
have to agree to it. And so we're trying right. to get more and more people. So that's one phase of it for the chronic
what
homeless.
What is the answer for shelters? Because everyone says we want the homeless off our streets and nobody wants the shelter next to them. So what is the answer for that?
My answer is the county has the money. The county has the money. The county has the land. It's not land that's out in the Mojave Desert. It's right here in the county of San Diego. They have the land. They have the money. We'd like to see the county step up and present some of those solutions. Whatever the shelter is, it has to have wraparound services
yes.
or it's pointless. So that, again, that's for the chronic homeless. And some of the people that are homeless are going to have to go through treatment, and some people might have to be in a facility that deals with mental health. Then we have the next step of people that are going to be homeless, and we're working on a rental assistance program. And I told a narrative that there's families that I know through my work in the school district that have come to me that are weeks away from being homeless because of something that's happened that was unscheduled.
Right. All it could take is one expensive car repair or medical bill sometimes.
Right. So we've been helping people with rental assistance so they're not living in their car, and then trying to find them more affordable housing so they've moved out of a three-bedroom apartment to a two-bedroom apartment, things of that nature, because if we can capture it before it happens, there's less homeless people. The last thing is that within this next calendar year, I've talked to the city manager that I want to double our budget to working, having the home program. We're in a contract with Home Start in East County, and so they're looking for homes for people and trying to get them off the street. But I'd like to double the budget. And talking to the police chief, laws will still be enforced. And I want to reassure the public, because someone's homeless, they're not above the law. And so if laws are being broken and people are being put in danger, the police are going to act in that way, in a humane way. But just because you're homeless doesn't excuse some of the behaviors that people are experiencing with people that are homeless. And so the public needs to be, everyone in the public needs to be treated fairly and feel that they're safe. And so the police chief has said that in his quarterly report, where he said, we're going to continue to enforce the laws. We're going to treat people humanely. But if you're experiencing homeless and you're breaking the law, then you're going to have to answer for that. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of policing, La Mesa, as you know, faced that devastating riot in May of 2020 after a protest over the George Floyd killing in Minnesota and also the actions of a local police officer. And there were buildings burned and merchants looted and so forth. What steps have been taken first to heal those racial tensions underlying the incident, implement any police reforms, and also what steps have been taken, hopefully, to prevent another incident like that in the future?
I think one of the first steps was we had new leadership. And that's not to say that the old leadership, caused any of this, but Captain Ray Sweeney was promoted to Chief Sweeney and has a clear vision on how to best have the police force engage the community and in some ways demystify what happens, but also educate people on how difficult it is to be a police officer. He has his Citizens Academy ride-alongs. The police are engaging all the time. He had many forums where he went and was very candid and sometimes heated people, but expressing their ideas and their concerns. Mm-hmm. And Chief Sweeney is a measured, thoughtful person. And so I think it starts from the chief all the way down. We created the Citizens Oversight, CPOB, and the chief is working with them. And
it's Police Oversight Board, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so those are some steps. There's been new hires, and as the chief has been bringing people in with a clear vision that we're here to serve, the city's here to serve, the police are here to serve, but also to make sure that the public understands that what the job is. And I think I've said this from the very beginning before I was on the council, the public needs to support the police so they feel supported, because they're going to serve us better if they feel that the public is behind them. And the way to do that, the more we know about each other, it is how we're going to do that. So I think the chief comes from the chief, and that's been probably the most powerful part of that. And his captains and lieutenants all have the same vision. In addition, the more we know about each other is having more cultural and events that celebrate a greater diversity. And so
like Juneteenth rolled out. Yeah.
I'm sorry, say that again.
Like the Juneteenth celebration.
Juneteenth, but also having music festivals and having even the concerts in the park that I started. We have a diverse group of people coming to play music. And so it brings a diverse group of people into the city. And I want to assure everyone in the county that La Mesa is a welcoming place. And so those are some of the things that we're doing. This happens in education. We say this, greater access, give access to all, and it'll create diversity. And so those are the things that the police and the chief are doing.
Very good. You have been a champion of the arts with your work in community theater, and as you just noted, founding the Sundays at Six concert in La Mesa during the summers. Some people have called for La Mesa to improve its arts and cultural offerings for the community, such as perhaps building a larger permanent library, a new community center, or even a public community theater. La Mesa now has an arts and culture commission that was established on your watch. Can you tell us what you would like to see as the priorities for enhancing arts and culture in La Mesa, whether that's any of the things we mentioned, new festivals, you know, or something else?
Well, I'm for a new library, and I met with the Friends of the Library president, and we're looking for options, and there's a library task force. I don't know if it's, I mean, my dream would be to have a theater. I don't know if it's plausible actually to have a full performing arts center in the city of La Mesa, but something on a lower scale that it mm-hmm. could serve multiple purposes as part of the entire civic center renovation, I think is what I'd like to see as a hub. Mm-hmm. But the other part is that we need to offer as many programs as possible that push out into the community, into the individual parks, into individual community areas. And so I was part of the founding members of the La Mesa Arts Alliance, and we put on many different activities, but I'd like to see those things happen in every community. Of course, the village is considered kind of the center of the mm-hmm. city. And so I'd like to see an art walk. I've been talking about that with the village, village association. But beyond that, North La Mesa and West La Mesa, there's strip malls and there's community gathering places mm-hmm. and there's parks to keep having activities. So it's happening right in their neighborhood as opposed to everybody having to come to the village. Nothing against the village. I love it. But we need to push out into the neighborhoods. And so I'm connected with the arts community in San Diego, and lots of different groups have asked me. There's a group that puts on the Twain Fest in Old Town, Write Out Loud, and they've asked me about bringing it out here.
That would be great. I'm very familiar. I've interviewed some of their folks on my radio show and heard their monologues that are bringing history to life. And La Mesa, of course, had its centennial a few years ago. Right. They used to do a multicultural festival, in fact, that kind of stopped when they did the centennial and had all of those activities. But
and we have the blues festival. It had to stop because the Heart Festival, which was all about blues mm-hmm. in Harry Griffin Park, had stopped because of COVID. But bring those things back. But that'd and then the last thing is we have some public area mm-hmm. as far as we're talking with the new formed Cultural Arts Committee as far as murals.
I didn't hear you.
You know, under bridges and things that don't, you know, aesthetically don't look fantastic, but mm-hmm. there's a good example of that as you travel into Lemon Grove from La Mesa under a bridge. It was a community offering.
Oh, the murals. Yeah. Okay. Right.
And something of that nature that obviously takes it an inane object that's usually just gray mm-hmm. concrete mm-hmm. and put some color on it.
Yeah, Ramona has done that. They have the Ramona Hart Murals Project. Now they have them all over town, and they're really beautiful. I meant to ask after the homelessness question, but housing. The state faces a shortage of housing, especially affordable homes. And yet some residents, again, raise concerns over high rises and impacts on parking from high density projects. So what is your view on how best to balance those competing needs? Is it possible to both meet the needs of housing and affordable housing and, you know, protect the character of our historic neighborhoods and other communities?
I think it is. We're built out in La Mesa, but clearly there's going to be developments that come in. And under density bonus, I don't think that we've done the best job educating the public on what density bonus is. Mm-hmm. And never want to use the term hands tied. We're going to follow the law. And so when projects come in, and I'll give you an example, Little Flower mm-hmm. Haven came in, and there was a lot of pushback on Little Flower Haven. It had been an assisted living project run by the Catholic Church, and it was given up because they couldn't afford to run it anymore. And so it was going to become apartments. And there was a big pushback, but it was density bonus, and we were trying to explain to the public. And I was learning along because density bonus was something that was just coming on board as far as in the city of La Mesa. It's been a California law.
Correct.
But explaining to people what our rights are as a city council as far as approving or denying projects. And projects can come in, and because they get density bonus, they're allowed certain waivers.
Less parking and things, yeah.
Less parking, higher, higher many stories and the height restrictions and things of that nature. And so With that project, I felt we worked with the developer very well. And
obviously, nice facade, some design guidelines in there.
And they kept that one facade. And it really does maintain the integrity of that building. In fact, I just told the story. I had a friend that had come back after 20 years, and they didn't even notice because it had been done so well and all of the foliage outside. And so I think the balance is that we need to work with developers, and developers need to come in and do outreach. And I try to encourage them. Mr. Fair, when he was doing the development up in the East Ridge area, he went out and he said, well, what do I need to do? I said, knock on every door and talk to everybody and sit down and demystify this. And so people don't think that their area is going to be taken over.
I remember that. I think I interviewed him. And is that the one where they came up with the multi-generational housing concept? And
it's an area, it's where the dinosaur was.
Yes. Anyways, up on the hill there. Yeah, that's right.
They're working on that right now. And in the end, not one comment was filed during that.
I do remember he went out and he found out people, a lot of them wanted a place where they could live and bring maybe an elderly parent in.
Exactly with right. them,
or a kid.
So I think it's important that the developers do their due diligence as opposed to just dropping in. And so we do have developers that are willing to do that, and that they come in and they have community meetings. And so the Jefferson project was a density bonus. There was very little that the city could do. They met with the people that live up on El Capitan, and they met with other people as far as what the color should look like. And that it shouldn't be the first iteration of that 12 years ago was going to be 19 stories.
I remember Park Station, they were calling it. Yeah,
exactly. And so I think that the balance that we're looking for is, of course, we need more affordable homes so people can live here, because someone said, why should people be allowed to come out here and live in La Mesa? And I said, it's not that. We have people that were grown up here, and they're moving back to care for their parents, and they're not, their parents are in a facility and they can't afford to live back in their hometown. And so those are some of the things. And obviously, when you don't have homes, it leads to homelessness. But I think there's a balance and trying to always bring people together is what I guess is my message here. For whatever we're talking about, trying to bring people together and sit and listen to each other, as opposed to folding your arms and saying, I don't like this and you don't like me, but listen to one another. So in this case, I always encourage developers, and even sometimes when I haven't met them, I outreach to them. I say, I know that's a density bonus project. I know that we have very little oversight in this regards, but you want the community to want this. You don't want them to fight against it.
Right. The businesses in La Mesa were hit by kind of a double whammy. First COVID lockdowns, and I think a week after those started to lift and some could reopen, the riot came along. You started to mention some of what's been done to help the businesses. I know your opponent's been running on a pro-business platform as a realtor, but I wanted to give you a chance to elaborate a little bit. Is there anything more that you're working on or that you think should be done to assist the business community in not only the village, but throughout La Mesa?
So I'm going to say our new focus in La Mesa is a culture of yes. It comes from the city manager all the way down, customer service training. So when businesses have to engage the city, that instead of getting no's and doors closed, their solutions are being created. So I'll start with outdoor dining. When COVID we're in the midst of all the lockdowns and businesses were coming and asking to use public right of way, and can we set up something to have outdoor dining, the city was accommodating. I know other cities have tightened their restrictions, and I heard stories in San Diego at different restaurants. And
they made it real expensive. Really, people wanted to keep it, and most of them didn't. It's just prohibitive.
I sometimes go to Redford's Diner, and they were having a heck of a time with it. So we try to relax those restrictions and work with businesses and make sure it was still safe for the patrons, but to allow them to expedite and allow people to have outdoor dining as fast as they could. We're still working in that direction to try to make all these things that we initiated permanent.
Yeah, I was going to say COVID is still circulating out there. And I know when I go places all the time, I hear from people, I'll go, but only if we can eat outside. So I think it's nice to have those options for people that that care about that.
But we also know that people, it was something that people want to have as permanent, even if we're out of COVID, that it was a nice as far as atmosphere. It gave them
Weather,
more seating, and so that's one part. That's for the restaurants. As far as reducing the cost for business licenses, we took that on, and we're reducing some of the costs. And then the LEAP program is one way that you can.
What is that? Tell me about that.
LEAP is La Mesa Entrepreneur Assistance Program. And so if you have the idea for a new business, that you come in and you can apply for grant money up to $20,000, you don't have to pay it back. You also go through an education program. And so there's assistance as you're going through. So you're not just dumped in. So your business will be successful. The goal of this is that the business won't fold. And so you have, you take some classes and that you have other business people that have been successful that are still in, that you have the ability to conference with them and talk to them as far as advertising and staffing and location and signage and everything that you can imagine. In addition to that, we have the business improvement program where we have money for to fix small things in front of your business. You need a new awning, or the sign needs to be repainted, or the front of the aesthetics of your business. And so we have that.
Does that help attract new business to an area of the place?
It does, because
good
when
rather
you
than run
improve
down.
Your business, it makes it look nicer, and obviously, and that might not be money that you have within your budget because costs are going up, and because insurance goes up, and all the costs associated with business. And then lastly, we have for our downtown area, have money for if someone wants to put on an activity. It could be a cultural activity. It could be whatever the kind of thing, the program they want to put on. If a business wants to sponsor something, there's money in the budget so they can apply for that grant.
Nice.
In addition to all of that, we have a very thriving, under the leadership of Mary Kennedy, we have a thriving La Mesa Chamber of Commerce, and we have our La Mesa Village Association. Both are thriving and encouraging advertising and business, and they have events too.
Mary, is that Mary England at the Chamber?
Mary England, yes.
Right. Very good. The LEAP program, was that a pilot in La Mesa? I hadn't seen any other local cities
we
do
worked
that.
I worked with the city manager and assistant city manager, Carlo Tomeino, and we were using ARPA funds from COVID funds, and that's what we decided to do with a portion of those funds. I was on that subcommittee, and we were looking for ways to help business that wasn't just throwing money everywhere, but have a targeted way to help the businesses. Now, when we first received COVID money, half of it went to rental assistance because we didn't want people to become homeless. Mm-hmm. Half of it went to the businesses. And then in addition to that, when we received more money, we assisted businesses again, because businesses that were really hurting because of the lack of customers, but also because of the shutdown.
Very good. Some misleading mailers have gone out, actually in several East County races, including, unfortunately, La Mesa's council and mayoral races. So I wonder if you could clarify for voters who your most significant endorsements are from, since that's been, you know, a point of deception, frankly, in some of the flyers that have gone around. Not your mailers, we should make clear, but some of the others that have gone out by independent groups and some candidates.
I say I'm endorsed by the voters of La Mesa. I've had over 1,000 people that are residents say, you can use my name and put it on a list, and that have endorsed me. As far as larger groups, this is a nonpartisan race.
Yes,
the San Diego Democrats have endorsed me based on my work in the past and I guess my work in the future. Endorsed by Dr. Akila Weber. And I'm endorsed by, many, many teachers in the city of La Mesa. And endorsements are great. What I promise, and I'll keep reiterating to people, is what you've seen, all of it's false. I've never taken money from big oil. I have never diverted ARPA money for my own good. I've never worked with taken money from developers to allow development or done anything of that nature.
And I'll add, we did some fact checking on some of those claims, the financial donation claims, and you're right, those appeared to be completely false claims that were made in some of these mailers.
And I'll just say this, and I've been real clear with everybody that wants to help me, I'll never say anything negative about anyone that's running. It's not because of a political thing. I've spent my entire career, my entire life talking about honesty and integrity, and it's binary. You can't say I'm going to have integrity on Wednesday, then Friday send out a mailer that and disassociate yourself with it.
Right.
So you and I would never be able to continue being the person I am if I knew that I had instigated something that was completely false and completely negative. And so I'm going to always be positive. I'm going to talk about myself, I'm not going to talk about the other people, and let the voters decide. And however it finally turns out, I'll be satisfied with that as long as I stay true, because I've led my life with honesty, integrity. And that's what I do lead my life with. And I'll continue to do that.
Very important. Where can people get more information on your candidacy? Do you have a website or
I
social media?
I do have a website. It's votedoctora.com and votedoctora.org. Votedoctora.org.
Okay.
And that has, you know, general information about me. And of course, anything on the city website shows you all the things that I've been involved with regarding the city. When you go to the city website, it has all of our programs, community service, what's going on with the park, all the development that's going on. So if you want to see, you know, what we've been doing the past 8 years, our city website lays it out for you too. And I appreciate, you know, when people look for press releases, I appreciate the articles you've written. There's some things in the UT. And so you search, you know, Rappistathis isn't a very common name. So when you search it, lots of things pop up about it.
Right. There you go. I'm going to let you have the final word today, but Mayor Rappistathis or Dr. A, what else would you like our audience to know about you and your candidacy for re-election as mayor of La Mesa?
That I've been serving the citizens of La Mesa since I was a child. I've been volunteering, and that's the way I see this job, is to serve the citizens of La Mesa, and to say that, you know, I enjoy, or I love spending time with my family in the city of La Mesa. I've been here my entire life. I've never left La Mesa. So I'm 56 and I was born and raised here and went to all the schools here. And so I think that I really have a good understanding of what the city's about. And as it's changing and new people are here, I'm out in the city meeting people and listening to them. I'm always willing to listen to everybody. And I think the biggest contribution I have on that respect is trying to educate people, especially when there's misconceptions about things that are happening in the city. And maybe they hear something on social media or that from a friend and it's inaccurate, trying to let them know what the truth is, not just about the election, but everything that's happening in Mesa. And the last thing I'm going to say is, I care about the city. That's why I stayed here. That's why I'm giving my time to serve. And I'd like to serve. This will be my last 4 years if I'm reelected, because I'll be termed out. But I want to do it because I want to serve the city. I feel a duty to serve the city that's been so good to me. And I love La Mesa.
Well, very good. I want to thank you so much. I know you're a very busy person, for taking the time to join us today on the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We have left no doubt, none, that Donald Trump led an effort to upend American democracy that directly resulted in the violence of January 6th.
January 6th Committee Chair Congressman Benny Thompson says it's their obligation to seek Trump's testimony, as the committee voted unanimously to subpoena the former president. After a year-long investigation reviewing thousands of interviews and pages of documents, Vice Chair Congresswoman Liz Cheney says they've confirmed that Trump knew his claims that the 2020 election was stolen were false, arguing against the possibility he was duped or irrational as he continued to make fraud allegations.
No president can defy the rule of law and act this way in a constitutional republic, period.
Also on Thursday, the Supreme Court rejected Trump's request to step into the legal fight over documents the FBI seized from his Mar-a-Lago estate. The court did not explain its reasoning for declining the request, which would have permitted his attorneys the ability to review the most sensitive records the FBI collected during its investigation. Inflation rose 0.4% in September and 8.2% over the past 12 months, with the core consumer price index reaching its highest level in 40 years.
A lot of people are hurting these days. Today's report shows, though, some progress. Overall, inflation was 2% over the last 3 months. That's down from 11% over the prior 3 months. That's progress.
President Joe Biden said the Inflation Reduction Act will help to lower costs and argued that inflation will rise if Republicans take control of Congress. The president also noted he plans to speak about bringing down high gas prices next week. Saudi Arabia claims the Biden administration urged the country to delay cutting oil production by 1 month, putting it behind the midterm elections. The Saudi government, which heads the OPEC oil conglomerate, rejected appeals from the U.S. to delay cutting oil production, potentially causing gas prices to spike ahead of Election Day. As the NATO military alliance in Russia hold nuclear exercises in the next few days, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg says Russian President Vladimir Putin would be crossing a very important line if he were to order the use of nuclear weapons in Ukraine.
Russia's nuclear rhetoric is dangerous, reckless, and they know that if they use nuclear weapon against Ukraine, it will have severe consequences.
13 people have been killed and 37 others wounded in the past 24 hours as the result of Russian attacks throughout the country. After a Florida jury recommended life without the possibility of parole on all counts against Parkland school shooter Nicholas Cruz, Ilhan Aldehef and other parents expressed disbelief and outrage that it wasn't the death penalty.
I pray that that animal suffers every day of his life in jail, and he should have a short life.
The judge will issue the final sentence November 1st. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find Array Trust Indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Governor Gavin Newsom signed a bill into law on Friday to require Caltrans to integrate wildlife corridors into its plans as roads are built around the state. Collisions between drivers and wildlife are rampant, with 44,000 reported between 2016 and 2020, and likely many more that go unreported, causing injuries, deaths, and property damage. Mari Galloway with Wildlands Network in Sacramento says animals need to be able to migrate freely.
Especially mountain lions in Southern California, their inability to move is causing genetic abnormalities and potential local extinctions. But also in Eastern California, we have mule deer corridors, which are being severed by some of the major highways through there.
Wildlife crossings allow animals to search farther afield for mates, which research says supports genetic diversity. Galloway adds the endangered desert tortoise and the California tiger salamander in particular should also now have a much better chance to survive and thrive. Kim Delfino with the group Earth Advocacy in Sacramento says Assembly Bill 2344 guarantees that Caltrans will now make wildlife corridors a priority.
They're going to be planning for it. They're going to be incorporating it into their projects. They're going to be upgrading their highway design manual. And they're going to be identifying areas across the state that are connectivity hotspots that need to be addressed.
Seven mountain lions have been found dead on or near the highways of Southern California this year. Support for this reporting was provided by the Pew Charitable Trusts. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment.
This is Miriam Raftery, host of the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And today I'm also guest hosting Bookshelf because my guest today is Raina Menashe, our host of Bookshelf. Raina's fiction has been honored by organizations such as the San Diego Writers and Editors Guild, San Diego Book and Writing Awards, and the Southern California Writers Conference. Her first novel, Twice Begun, and her second novel, Silent Bird, were both finalists in the 2012 and 2013 San Diego Book Awards. And her newest novel, a paranormal suspense titled The Spirit of Shy Moon Lake, was released in spring 2021. Her first children's book, The House That Sneezed, will be released early next year. She is currently writing Thrice Begun, the sequel and prequel to Twice Begun. Her website, RainaMenashe.com, includes blogs on psychology and wellness, writing, and other social commentary. Also a licensed clinical social worker, Raina Menashe has taught psychology and counseling at Southern California universities, as well as therapeutic techniques to human service professionals. In addition, she's a workshop leader at the Southern California Writers Conference in San Diego and Irvine. She created a class called Character Therapy and You're the Shrink. I love that. And it's alive to emphasize the joyful creativity of exploring therapeutic exercises with a fictional character. Raina has served as vice president of the Kronos Theater Group, and she often uses dramatic as well as therapeutic techniques in her creative work. And of course, as host of our bookshelf right here on East County Magazine's radio show in San Diego, Raina interviews local authors and sometimes national ones about their creative processes. And you can find more about her at her website, RainaMenashe.com, and that's spelled RainaMenashe.com. Raina, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Miriam. It's so much fun to be on my own show.
Yeah, it's different, isn't it, being the interviewee instead of the interviewer.
It feels a little strange.
Yeah. I've got to ask, switching from prior genres, and you're really noted for crossing genres in your books that really defy definition. How difficult was it to switch from psychological romance novels that dealt with some heavy subjects such as addiction and recovering from different traumas into writing paranormal suspense?
Well, in some ways, I see it as consistent because in a way, the suspense book really has a lot to do with trauma and the stories that we tell to comfort ourselves, to soothe ourselves after a trauma, the different paths we choose or don't choose, how we heal or don't heal. I'm always doing this psychological thing, but I put it in a different kind of story. I think I've always wanted to write something scary, scary in the more paranormal sense, and I've been hinting in that direction, and so I decided to just kind of plunge in and do it, and it was very different writing this book.
Well, I've read Spirit of Shy Moon Lake. I enjoyed it, even though it did keep me up all night. It is a page
turner. Oh, yay.
So you did your job. Yeah. Where did you dream up your ideas for this creative book, Raina, in which people are drawn to this beautiful but perilous Shy Moon Lake and the secrets from the past that it holds?
Well, and it started with an idea. What if you were in a place where your karma, so to speak, what you sow, you know, what you reap, you sow, comes back at you really quickly, where you get what you deserve or you don't get what you don't deserve, or at least people think that's what happens. And then I sort of, you know, it just meanders off. I mean, this book took about a decade to write. And in that process, it changed quite a bit, but it had a lot to do with what people believe again, what they tell themselves, how we often don't know what's true, what's not true.
Interesting. What was the inspiration for your main character, Jess McCourtney, and for that matter, any of the other key characters that are so compelling in this book, Raina?
Well, you know, sometimes people have always asked me that, especially, well, in my former books as well. And sometimes they think it's me because I often write in the first person.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're all like bits and pieces of me. It's like one big salad or a collage. I think Jess has parts of me for sure. Raising a small boy, the pains, traumas, and incredible joys of motherhood are in there. What it's like to experience betrayal is in there. You know, these are things that everyone experiences, or not everyone, but many people experience. The main character, Charlie McCourtney, her husband, he's a poet. And I think I explored a lot about artists there. Again, what they tell themselves, the stories they tell themselves, how they comfort themselves, how they cope with life's dilemmas and mistakes. Now, the other sort of the residents of the town, I really just had plain romping fun with that. I wanted to make them superstitious, but I wanted to create superstitions and beliefs that don't currently exist. I didn't want to trod on anyone's beliefs or, you know, traditions. I just sort of made up my own. So the whole thing is imagination from beginning to end. But again, why do people believe what they believe?
Who knows? Yeah, fascinating psychological angles in this. So you actually finished writing and marketing the book in the middle of a global pandemic and lockdown. How challenging was that? Or maybe it was the opposite. Maybe you found you had a lot of time on your hands all of a sudden.
Well, I had already written it and I had done most of the editing, final editing, for a long time, actually. And what the pandemic did is when it started, it just kind of took the oomph out of me. I had two book launches, two or three that I canceled because I didn't want to do them virtually. Virtual launchings are fine. It's just that I wanted to read this aloud, you know, live.
So you were saying it just sort of took the oomph out of things. In what ways?
I had all this excited preparation that I had to change. So there were live book launches that I had to cancel. And also, I have to say, I got a little depressed, like lots of people, you know, with the shutdown.
Sure.
And I guess it took a lot of, it took me longer. It took me longer. I just kind of sat on it for several months. So and then it inspired, of course, other books, because you're thinking pandemic themes.
Oh, my gosh. Let's talk about finding the silver lining there.
Right? Yeah. Not that anyone wants to hear about a pandemic right now.
Did you try any virtual events?
I did. I've gotten used to it. I think we go kicking and screaming into things that we're not used to. I'm a clinician, as you know, in my day job, and I do those meetings virtually.
As we're doing this interview via Zoom right now.
Exactly. So I think now I would do a virtual book launch, but at the time I was still, you know, I wanted to do things live. Yeah. So it was disappointing in that way, but you do end up saving some money during a pandemic if you're still employed. So use some of those things to revamp my website. You know, as I said, make lemons out of lemonade if you can.
There you go. Raina, can you read an excerpt for us from The Spirit of Shy Moon Lake?
Sure, I would love to. I'm going to take an excerpt that's fairly early on. It's page 23 in the book. And I'll begin where the little boy, Jonah, they just moved to Shy Moon Lake, the family, that's Jess, her husband, Charlie, and Jonah. And the little boy, Jonah, was climbing on the balcony right away the second they got to their new house and almost fell and hurt himself. And so the mother is shaken up. This is the scene right afterwards. Mommy, are you mad at me? No, you just scared me, honey. I'm fine now. Sorry I raised my voice. He thought about that and smiled. Yeah, he would forgive me. Big of him. Then he stood on his tippy toes, peering towards the lake. Who's that? Who's who? He pointed. There, in the water. I squinted at the inky blackness, recalling the town legend about long ago lovers drowning. Sorry, honey, it's too dark. You're just seeing tree shadows. There were indeed tree shadows, thrown by starlight, shifting across the dark water like a flutter of insects. Silhouettes of trees appeared suspended between opposing diadems of light. The Milky Way above and its reflection on the waters of Shy Moon Lake below. How thrilling, I thought, to view a night sky containing more than six or seven stars. Against this luminous, scintillating dome, anything seemed possible. Like, I wondered, what would happen to all this beauty if there was an earthquake? Violent quakes had no doubt accompanied the birth of the volcano that now cupped the lake. How many points on the Richter scale could these cottages endure before windows shattered, porches toppled, the land crumbling beneath our feet? Maybe we will need to climb inside that refrigerator. Mrs. Paddock said, Mrs. McCourtney, are you all right? I shook off the unwanted gloom. I might not be as congenitally cheerful as my husband, but I was not usually like this either. Yes, thank you. I'm fine. I'm just tired. It's been a long day. As Charlie rose back up the steps, the upper half of his body hidden behind boxes and bags, a door slammed. A porch light flicked on in the cottage next door. We looked over. A woman with short, darkish hair gazed back at us. Her expression flash frozen. Good evening, I called, waving, happy for the distraction. We're moving in. She did not reply, just stared. She had to have heard me. The cottages were not that far apart. I stepped to the end of the porch. My name is Jess. This is my husband, Charlie, and our son, Jonah. We've bought this place and we're moving in right now. Still no response from the lady next door. Was she ill? Disabled? Finally, as if set to a delayed timer, her eyebrows went down and a smile opened up nice and big. Well, hello. Welcome.
What a marvelous and somewhat chilling piece of foreshadowing that is.
Thank you.
Love it. I've got to ask you about your class, Character Therapy and You're the Shrink, emphasizing, as we've noted, the joyful creativity of exploring therapeutic exercises with a fictional character. Can you tell us a little bit more about that for people who may be interested?
Yes, this class is really, it's really personal. It's like an art project for me. When I was little, I couldn't decide between being a writer and being, say, a psychologist. So basically, I kept going back and forth between the two of them. This class is really putting it all together. I take all these psychological theories that I learned in my master's degree in my profession and look at a character from all these theories, the child development theories. Where did your character get stuck in developmental tasks that causes current behavior? Or looking at defense mechanisms and thought distortions and sort of really looking into these explanations that we've developed to understand your character better if you choose to. Now, do I do that with my characters? I think I do it more on an informal level, but I also hand out to the people who attend the class, I hand out lots of worksheets so that they can revisit these theories and play with them, play with your characters, have fun. This is the sandbox.
Very wise advice. The characters are really what drives a novel, I think, even more than plot. So that begs the question of what are you working on next?
Twice Begun, which was my first novel, has to do with sort of reinventing yourself after, you know, a huge betrayal, and how sometimes the people that we think are better people don't turn out to be as good as people who have been through very hard times and have risen above.
Yeah.
There is a house in that book, it's her great aunt's house in Coronado, that was a home for hysterical women during World War II. And a lot of readers said, man, I wanted to learn more about that house. And when are you going to write the sequel to the book? I want to know what happens to this former social worker who gets involved with a person who's a recovering addict or former client, which is taboo. Anyway, so yeah. I decided to write this sequel and prequel. Ah. So it goes into the great aunt's youth in this house, as well as, so that's called Thrice Begun. I'm about, you know, halfway, maybe three quarters of the way through that. And then there's a children's story called The House That Sneezed that is really four drawings. I'm not doing the drawings, but it's very near completion. So that one also has psychological themes, basically to help little kids deal with grief by using a metaphor of the house that's not feeling well.
And very timely right now with a pandemic that's killed 700,000 Americans as we speak.
If I could say that that book was inspired by when I worked with little kids and families, and I was looking for that book to use with the children that I worked with, and I couldn't find it. So I finally said, okay, well, let's create it.
So it's really filling an important need. Well, Raina, you're just so versatile, and I want to thank you today. We are out of time, but I want to thank you for coming on the show today and sharing all of your marvelous literary knowledge with us. Readers, you can find more about Raina Menashe and her books at rainamenashe.com, and that's spelled RainaMenashe.com.
It was a pleasure, Miriam. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. You've been listening to the Bookshelf segment on East County Magazine's radio show on KNSJ, bringing you news about local literary luminaries and some great books to read. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show,
Laura Preble, Corey Clement, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.